So this little bottle I have with me, this Nalgene, if you are a millennial like me, these were cool like when we were like in high school, and now they're cool again, I guess, maybe. You know, it's just another one of those bottles that ends up stuck at the back of your cabinet until the next cool Nalgene or Yeti comes up. But I love to go hiking. It's like the time, it's like my thing. It's like, I love being out in nature. I leave my phone in my car usually. Nobody can talk to me. I can just like be in nature. And it's like, I feel most connected with God in nature, because it's like, you look at trees and you think about like, man, how do trees work? And you know, and like exchanging oxygen and CO2. It's like, man, God designed like such amazing things. And then that gives me oxygen. And then I breathe, like, it's just insane. So I just love being in nature. And a lot of the times I'll want to go for a walk, but it'll be kind of sporadic. And so I won't have my water bottle with me. And I know like trails around Huntsville and around Conroe. And so I'll just go, I'll go on a walk real quick. And you know, I know how long they pretty much are. So sometimes I won't even bring my water. I'll just get out of my car and I'll start walking. Well, the other day I started walking and I didn't bring my water bottle. I left all my stuff in my car, which is kind of like, it's a little dangerous and probably irresponsible, especially as a father and a husband. But there's like an element of that that's like, yeah, it is kind of dangerous, isn't it? I'm going to be risky. I'll go 5 miles over the speed limit today. But I started walking down this trail that I know very well. I've walked it numerous times. And I was tracking in my head, like, I know it goes this way and kind of curves back. And so I was trying to go in somewhat of a loop. But when I got to the furthest point away from my car, the trail was flooded. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I can't keep going through the flood. And it was like pretty deep. I couldn't just like walk through it. And I was like, uh-oh, okay, so it's flooded. So that means I need to go back this way. And so because of the way I had gone, I kind of had to like, I walked like 3 times further than I needed to or originally planned on going. And so by the time I'm like headed back to my car, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm kind of thirsty. I'm like really sweaty. I'm getting a little tired. The sun's starting to come up a little bit. And so I get back to my car and I had my Nalgene in my car, just didn't bring it with me. And so I just chugged half the bottle and I'm like, okay, oh, okay, I feel relief. I'm going to be okay. But I've been wanting to take Hezekiah, my son, walking with me. And he can go a little bit, but like I'll go, like a quick walk to me is like 2.5 miles. So I'm like, let's go on a quick walk. But Hezzy can't do that. And if I want to take my son with me on a walk, I can't neglect bringing the water, right? Because my son is going to get a lot more tired than I do, a lot more fast than I do. And if we're walking and I didn't prepare and bring my water, and Hezzy goes, Dad, I'm thirsty, give me something to drink. I'm going to be like, I can't, because I don't have anything to pour out to you, right? And that's the way that we need to see ourselves as far as like being on mission for the Lord is, I think sometimes, and even I've looked at it this way, when we think about serving others and like this pouring out, we think about it like we're pouring out to strangers or like people we don't know, right? Like we're here to serve the people we don't know, the stranger on the street and everything. The reality is it's much more closely to like our children, or much more closely to like a brother or sister, because we're all made in the image of God, like you are my brothers and my sisters, right? We can't see each other as strangers, because God's not a stranger to us, and God made them, God is in them, so they're not strangers to us, right? They're brothers and sisters. We may not know their name, but they're not strangers. And so the thing I want to focus on today is this idea of like, we have been called to serve the kingdom, but we can't do that if we don't have anything to pour out. Right? So if we're not connected to the source, if we don't have something that we can pour out, we can't serve. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. I want to start with kind of reviewing where we've been. We started this table series back with the one, right? Our one-on-one time with Jesus. And then we moved into the few, and this is like our small group of people that we spend time with who encourage us, who love us, who know our warts and everything, and we can grow with. And then there's the many. This is church, right? What Jesus said about the church, what we are to be. This is to be a house of worship. And now we're moving into the kingdom. So all of that culminates to us pouring out into his kingdom, right, upon the earth. And we are to be ambassadors. We are to be priests, we are to be his hands and feet, and we are to be on mission. But we can't do that if we're not still connected to the source, right? I saw this cute little meme. I showed our staff the other day, and I felt like the old man on staff showing people Facebook posts. I was like, look at this cool meme I found. And they're like, oh, cool. Okay, Mitch. Oh, yeah. But it's Jesus, and he's like talking to his disciples, and this is like what Jesus did not say. He's like, guys, just chill out. Like, I'm going to die. I'm going to be resurrected, and then I'll come back later. But, like, until then, like, just chill out. Like, it's all going to be good. Just live your life. And, like, okay, if some point during your life you tell somebody about me, like, that would be pretty chill. Like, that would be cool. But, like, don't be weird about it. And, like, make, like, don't tell anybody to, like, follow my commandments and stuff. Like, that's kind of weird, and, like, you don't want to be weird. So, like, you know, just live your life, and if it's convenient for you, like, maybe you can tell somebody about me, right? That's not what Jesus asked us to do, but that's kind of how we live our lives sometimes. I mean, right? It's like, we talked about this on our staff the other day, and please hear me, like, evangelism and telling somebody about Jesus is not, like, the be-all, end-all. Like, I think we're going to get into that in a second, but, like, I was thinking, when was the last time I talked to somebody about Jesus who didn't already know Jesus, right? Like, go through your brain and start thinking, when was the last time, like, I told somebody about Jesus? Let's look at Matthew 11:28. It says, then Jesus said, come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light. We talked about this last week during Easter. This is the language of work. This is not the language of passivity. God has given us something to do. He has given us a mission. And that mission is, Matthew 28:19, therefore, go, not stay, not do nothing. Therefore, go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. So we have a mission to fulfill with Jesus. And that mission is to be like Jesus to those around us. Notice Jesus did not say, go and make converts of the nation. He didn't say, go make converts. He said, go make disciples. And I think the thing is, that's much harder. The Greek word disciple is mathetes, I think is how you pronounce it. Mathetes. And it's probably, because I think disciple fits firmly into, like, the Christianese vocabulary. Like, I think if we said the word disciple to a non-believer, they would kind of be like, what does that mean? I think another good word to use is, like, learner or, like, apprentice. Mathetes is where we get our word mathematics from. So that's, like, learning a skill. And so when we talk about being a disciple to Jesus, what we're talking about is, like, being an apprentice to Jesus, right? Anybody a tradesman? Did you have to go through, like, apprenticeship, journeyman, master, and all that? I started looking at the skill. It was funny. I looked at the skill tree thing, and it was, like, axiomatic. Well, I left my phone off stage. It doesn't matter. But they talked about being an apprentice. Even before that, you're not an apprentice. You're a novice, right? And it means you're unconscious and incapable. Like, that's the way they list it. Like, you don't know nothing and you can't do nothing, right? Like, that's what a novice is. And then as you move up, you become conscious, but still incapable. And then you become a journeyman, you are competent and capable. And then when you become a master, you are capable, but it's no longer a conscious thing. It's like second nature, right? Like, you've practiced it so much. They talked about a master carpenter showing up to a job and, like, measurements just being second nature, and, like, a plumber putting in pipe and knowing how it's going to need to be angled. And it's just second nature. At some point, you'll reach a place where it's like, it's just second nature. I know, like, Brie, if you look at musicians like Brianna or Melvin or anybody up here, I know you think that they just kind of show up and they're just like, play music. Like, they all have to practice still, right? But there are a few people we've met over the years, especially, it typically ends up being guitarists. Guitarists have, like, and every once in a while you'll find a guitarist who comes and plays with us who can just show up, no music, they just play by ear. And so they're like, okay, what key are we in? Okay, and they can just instinctually play whatever's being played. And it's because they've practiced so much over and over and over again. They know it by heart. They don't have to remember, oh, is it this chord? Is it this key? Whatever. They know it by heart. They hear it with their ears. They feel it in their body. But that only comes through practice. That's not something you just, like, all of a sudden get, right? Trust me. I don't play worship anymore for a reason, okay? I was a fill-in, okay? I was second best. But this idea of apprenticeship is like we are learning to be more like Jesus. And that means having heart change. When I worked at Red Lobster before I was a believer, why y'all laugh at Red Lobster, don't hey? I think all of you should wait tables for 5 years and realize just how unimportant you are, okay? But when I waited tables, I remember this one particular table. They weren't rude or, like, they weren't unkind. They were just kind of like any other table. But, like, they weren't, like, overtly nice. Let's put it that way. They weren't, like, they didn't yell at me or weren't mean. But I remember when I went to take their bill, the little book was, like, open. And I walked over, and there was a $100 bill in the thing. And I was like, oh, dang. Did I just get tipped? It was like a lunch service too. So I was like, oh dang, $100 at lunch. I could just quit right now. I could just leave for the day. And so I saw it and I picked it up. And the second I touched it, I was like, oh, something's fishy here. It was way too thick. And I picked it up. What was it? What do you think? A tract, yeah. To a non-believer, how do you think that felt? And so I'm like, cool, $100 bill. Okay, no, it's a tract. I turn it over and it's just like, whatever verses were written on there. How do you think that made me feel? Angry, disappointed, deceived, unvalued. I was far more moved by the way that they behaved and the way that they treated me than that tract that they left in my little book. Far more. We have to remember that. I promise you. Growing up in the Bible Belt, I went to church during Easter. You know, I was a CEO. I went to church at Christmas and Easter only, you know. So I heard sermons. I heard sermons my whole life growing up. My mom had a wooden thing above our door going into our sunroom that said, be aware lest ye, entertain angels unknown or whatever that verse is. Other than that, never heard, like, we didn't talk about Christianity, we didn't talk about religion. And so, like, I heard all of this growing up, but then I would see the way that my family behaved, and I was kind of like, I don't understand. Like, there's a disconnect here. The first time my family discussed our beliefs as a family was when one of my cousins was dating a Muslim and brought him to Christmas. That was the first time. And you know what the attitude was? Oh, we're still praying. Oh, I don't care what he thinks. We, because in this family, we're Christians and we pray. And I was like, I'm 16 years old, and this is the first time I've heard you say that out loud. Because I would have guessed otherwise. I didn't know, right? And the attitude was not, hey, this is somebody who's coming into our home, and we are going to love him as Christ loved him. It was more of a battleground. It was more of a combative thing. And here's the thing: when your faith is that thin, everything does seem like a threat. Because, you know, you've got paper mache, you know how thin it is? You can just, like, flick it, bust a hole in it. When your faith is like that, yeah, everything is like an attack, because that's how thin your faith is. But when you spend time with the Lord and you allow your heart to be strengthened, it's no longer a worry. If a Muslim walked in here, I'm not going to be like, oh, quick, somebody, Chris Gregory, get him. Like, no alarm, Chris, false alarm. No, we would welcome him in and love him like Christ loved him, right? Right? That's the refinement that we're looking for. That's the pouring out that we need to do. The pouring out is not picketing at Walmart, you know, telling them it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. That's not loving, okay? That's not loving. That's not loving. One time when I was in high school, my buddy Nick and I, you know, it's summertime, so we had nothing else to do, so we're like, dude, let's just see how long we can stay up. Let's just do it. Let's at least aim for 24 hours and see how it goes. So we woke up at like 8 o'clock that morning, and we're like, we're going to stay up as long as we can, at least 8 a.m. the next morning, right? 24 hours. And so we went throughout the day kind of just doing normal stuff. You know, you don't have to worry about it until you get sleepy. And so it wasn't until about 2 a.m. we start going, okay, like I'm feeling it a little bit. Like I'm starting to get a little groggy. What should we do? Oh, let's play Halo. So we played Halo on Xbox, right, online, because when you're interacting with other people, it's distracting, you know, and you can only do that for about 2 hours. And then Nick had a hot tub and he had a pool. So what we would do is we'd go sit in the hot tub for like 10 minutes and then we go jump in the pool and ooh, it's shocky, right? And then you go back to the hot tub and you're like, oh, it's so hot and you get sleepy. And then you go back to the pool, ooh, it's cold. You know, so we would go back and forth and we did that for like 45 minutes or an hour. So now it's 4 a.m. and we're like, okay, well, like, what do we do now? We're like, oh, let's go ride our skateboards. And it started raining outside. So we're riding our skateboards in the rain down the street. And it's like, we're riding our skateboards, but we're also kind of tired. So it's kind of like, we're doing it. We're awake. This is fun. And eventually we got to the point where we come back to Nick's house. He had like a finished basement. So we're sitting in the basement and we're kind of like running out of stuff to do. And we're like, I don't know. What do you want to do? And he was like, I mean, we could watch like a movie, but like a cool movie. Because like if you watch a movie, you'll fall asleep. So like, let's watch something like really intense. So we put on 300. Anybody watch 300? Oh yeah. Like, ugh. Like nothing gets you more pumped up than watching 300. So I was like, yeah, let's watch 300. We're like, take our shirts off. And we're like, yeah, let's just, hey. And so then we started fighting each other. Like, hey, let's just punch each other. So we're just like, boom, boom. But just as hard as we can, just punching each other in the chest and stuff, which worked. It helped a lot. Like gets that adrenaline going. And eventually it gets to about, I guess we finished the movie And we probably hopped on the computer and played games or whatever. And then all of a sudden, like, I don't remember anything after that. Like, I remember waking up the next day at like 3 p.m. like, ah, what happened? And at some point, we just passed out. I think Nick fell asleep on his computer desk like this. Because at some point, your body needs sleep. At some point, you're gonna pass out. You can drink all the coffee you want. You can drink all the energy drinks, whatever. You are going to pass out because your body must have rest to function, right? You have to. You have to have rest to function. And that's the thing. If you're not getting it, there's nothing that can satisfy it. Nothing. And when we're attempting to live like Jesus, if we're attempting to serve others, but we're not connected to the source, that's what it feels like. You'll pour out. You'll give as much as you want, but eventually you're going to get exhausted. And eventually you start operating out of frustration. I went on a missions trip to India, and we were like taking medicine to like remote villages, and then we were painting like an orphanage, all the stereotypical like mission work type stuff. But it was incredible. It was so cool. I've never felt more culture shock in my life than getting out of the airport in New Delhi and getting on a train in India. It was wild. Wild. It was so cool. But there were these two gentlemen who were with us who just kind of complained the whole time. They were like, ugh, it's hot. I'm like, it's the Asian subcontinent. Like, what do you expect? It's hot everywhere. They don't have winter. Like, it's always hot. What did you expect? And then everything we ate, every single meal, I kid you not, was some sort of curry, dal, which is like lentils, and then naan bread. Every meal. Now, it was different flavors, like different, like, oh, this one's spicier. Oh, this one has lamb in it. Oh, this one has chicken. It was a little bit different, but it was curry, dal, naan. Curry, dal, naan. And every time it was spicy, like super spicy. And so these dudes who were with me, they did not eat spicy food. And so like every time we ate, they're like, oh, it's just too spicy. I hate it. Oh, my stomach hurts and blah, it's so hot and blah. And it was like, we would go to these villages and help these kids get medicine and stuff. And it was like everything that they were doing, it just felt like a chore. Like, oh, we're helping kids get eyeglasses. And obviously we don't speak Hindi, but we like learned a couple words. Like TK means like, is it good? And so I'm like giving them eyeglasses and I'm like, have like a little chart behind me. And I'm like, TK, TK? And they're like, no. And I'm like, oh, I understand, no. Okay, new glasses. TK, TK? And they're like, no. I'm like, okay. But the guy next to me, the one who's complaining, he's sitting there just getting frustrated. He's like, is it good or not? Do you understand? You know English? You know, if you speak to somebody who speaks a different language, Spanish is not English louder, you know? Like, Hindi is not English louder, you know? And so he's just getting frustrated with these kids. And I'm like, hey, man. And I'm 19, and he's like in his 30s or 40s. And I'm like, maybe calm down a little bit. I don't know. Like, I don't. But it was like, he's on a missions trip to be a witness of Christ to people, but his attitude says far more about his witness to Christ than what he's doing. You know, it's like if somebody was like, hey, I want to come over to your house and cook you dinner. And then the whole time they're doing it, they're like, ugh, I hate these pans. Oh my gosh, your oven is so old. Oh, wow. Wow, you guys eat that brand of ketchup? Wow, wow, okay. Oh, you don't have that? Okay, well, I guess I'll like do my best. Like, you would be like, can you leave? I don't want, whatever you have, I don't want. And let me tell you, as somebody who didn't grow up as a believer, I've said that to more than one Christian. Whatever you have, I don't want. Because I can see it all over you, and I don't want it to get on me. I don't want that. Our generosity should be seen in the way that we live our lives, not the way that we tell people we live our lives, right? Like, I'm thinking about, like, people in my life. Like, I know people who are financial experts. I know people who are construction experts. I know people who are you know, experts in renting homes. I know people who are experts in running sound. I know people who are experts in music. I would go ask them based on the way that I've experienced them in my life. Versus the person who comes to you and goes, oh yeah, I'm an expert. Like, hey, you need to ask me about that. Hey, I hear you talking to somebody, but like, you need to ask me because I know lots about that kind of stuff. I'm like, yeah, you can tell me all you want. But like, I'm more interested in seeing the fruit that somebody's life has produced, amen? You can tell me you're an expert. I'm more interested in seeing how it works out in your life, right? Ooh, okay, I'm about to share a story. Not appropriate, I'm gonna put somebody on blast, so we'll put that one on pause. That one's for 5 years from now. You know, we'll figure it out. let's look at an example in Matthew 23, and then we're going to jump to Matthew 8. This is Jesus talking to the Pharisees, and then he's addressing a Roman soldier. Matthew 23 says, "What sorrow awaits you teachers of religious law and you Pharisees, you hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, beautiful on the outside, but filled on the inside with dead people's bones." Dude, what a burn. Dead people's bones. Whitewashed tombs filled with dead people's bones. That's like, I don't know why some Christian metal band hasn't picked that up. That is so sick. Filled with dead people's bones and all sorts of impurity. Outwardly, you look like religious people, but inwardly, your hearts are filled with hypocrisy and lawlessness. This is what Jesus is talking about. He's like, yeah, you can do a lot of the stuff. You say all the stuff. You go through the motions, but like, dude, you're dead inside. I don't want anything to do with you. You've missed it. But then we see in Matthew 8, 5 through 12, when Jesus returned to Capernaum, a Roman officer came and pleaded with him, "Lord, my young servant lies in bed, paralyzed in terrible pain." Jesus said, "I will come and heal him." Pause real quick before we go any further. What was the Roman officer's position as he approached Jesus? What did he call him? Lord. This Roman officer, theoretically, has authority over Jesus and everybody else he's standing in front of. Because we're going to read a little bit and find out. He's probably an officer. He's probably pretty high up in the Roman government. He has authority over all these people he's around. The Pharisees had authority over all of the Jews, but there is a stark contrast in how they address people. The Pharisees address people from a place of superiority, from a place of arrogance, right? This Roman officer comes to Jesus and says, "Lord," which, I mean, I don't know historically if this is true. This is conjecture at this moment, but like, I feel like that's probably could have gotten him in trouble because Caesar was seen as a demigod and he was the only one to be worshipped. So even Jesus, or even the Roman officer addressing Jesus as Lord is a risky thing, but it shows that he has a humble and contrite heart. And then does Jesus give him a riddle? Does he give him like a metaphor? You know how some people ask Jesus for something and he's like, "Well, what do you think? Let me tell you about this gardener real quick." And people are like, "I just need the thing. Can you just tell me? You're going to tell me anyway. Okay, just tell me about the gardener." But no, what does Jesus say? "Yeah, I'll heal him." Instantly. Instantly. But the officer said, "Lord, I am not worthy to have you come into my home." Humility. "Just say the word from where you are, and my servant will be healed. I know this because I am under the authority of my superior officers. I have authority over my soldiers. I only need to say, go, and they go, or come, and they come. And if I say to my slaves, do this, they do it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed. Turning to those who were following him, he said, "I tell you the truth, I haven't seen faith like this in all of Israel." What was he trying to capture? What was so important about this man's faith? Confidence. Trust. He was like, "You're the man. You say it, it'll be done. You say it and you'll be done." And notice the Roman soldier didn't come to Jesus and say, "Hey, I know I haven't read my Bible in a long time, but like, I promise next week I'm going to get to it. Also, I know my prayers have been like a little, sporadic here and there, but I promise starting tomorrow, I'm going to be on a prayer plan. And so before I ask you, I just want to let you know, like, I am intentional. I promise you, I'm going to do these things. I'm going to be more intentional. But can you do me this favor real quick?" Notice he's not proctoring himself or positioning himself in a place of like, "I deserve this," because he doesn't. He comes to him and he says, "Lord, if you deem it worthy, if you deem it good to do, will you do this?" He does not come with an agenda. He doesn't come with like, "Let me prove myself before you." He says, "Lord, if you want to do this, I know you can. And if you want to do it, you will." And Jesus turns to them and he says, "I tell you, I haven't seen faith like this in all of Israel." This is really important. He says, "I tell you this, many Gentiles will come from all over the world, from the east and from the west, and sit down with Abraham, with Isaac and Jacob at the feast in the kingdom of heaven. But many Israelites, those for whom the kingdom was prepared, will be thrown into outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Jesus is telling them, like, some of y'all feel like you got it all together. Some of you feel like, "Yeah, I grew up in the temple. You know, I know all the Sabbath rituals. I know how to do all this and that." He's like, "But there are people who didn't grow up in tradition, who don't feel like they got it all together. They are going to be the ones who feast with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." And those of us who have become so sterilized by religion, we are the ones who are going to miss it. I'm not looking for the Pharisees who have got it all together, who make it look like they're all together, right? They look like religious people. I'm looking for the Roman soldier who may not have a clue about God. He may not know all the intricacies of like Adam and Eve in the garden. He may not understand the Torah, but you know what he does have? He has a humble heart and he recognizes God's authority. That's what Jesus is looking for, right? He's not looking for us to be impressive here on earth. Like Shania Twain, he says, that don't impress me much, okay? I hope you all go listen to that song today. I wanted to plant that little seed. That don't impress me much. Jesus is like, you can talk the talk, but can you walk the walk? That's what I'm interested in. I'm looking for servants for my kingdom. Sometimes there are people who want to come have a position of authority. And I experienced this while Luke was here too. This isn't just me. This is stuff that I've also heard from Luke. And so please take it from a place of humility and just wanting to share a point. There are people who want to be in positions of authority in the church. And there are times where there are people who will approach us and say, hey, look at my resume and look at all these things I've done. You should be glad to have me. Thank you, Murphy. I appreciate you laughing at that. And that is more often than not a pretty clear indicator that we don't need to put them in leadership. The people that we choose for leadership are people who are already doing the things that God has expected them to do, right? Again, you can tell me all you want about how you deserve to be in this position and do these things, but like, think about your job. Like, do you go to your boss and you're like, I think I need your job. I'd probably do it better than you. Like, that's not how like promotion works. Like, what do you do? How do you earn that position? You do your job well. You show up and you show them that you can do your job well, right? And then they come to you and go, whoa, I can see that you know what you're doing and that you're willing to work hard. And you know what? Now I will give you a position, right? It works the same way in God's kingdom. You're like, man, I wanna go on missions. I wanna serve people and help people. And God's like, okay, do it. Well, no. I wanna do like a real missions trip. Like, I really wanna go to like India or I wanna go to China. He's like, there's poor, sick, needy people here in Huntsville. Why are you going overseas? There's people right here. There's people in your row that need your help. There are people who don't know Jesus in Huntsville. Why is that not good enough for you? That hurts me. Because, yeah, you see all these needs. A brother and sister-in-law are missionaries in Africa, you know? They're doing, like, the stereotypical thing, right? Like, they're in Africa helping people, and you're like, they're doing the work, right? Like, they're real Christians. There are people in Huntsville who need you. They need us to love them, to care for them, to shepherd them. And the thing is, here's the thing, that's the scary thing. You're already witnessing to them because they see you at HEB. They see you driving in traffic. Ooh, Lord knows, I'm driving through Huntsville. I'm the nicest driver you've ever met because I don't want none of y'all to see me and be like, that's Pastor Mitch driving like a crazy person. I'm like, nope, I don't care. Cut me off. I don't care. Go for it. Absolutely. I am at peace with the Lord. I don't care. You know what? I'll just go this way. I don't care. 19th Street's not that long. It's fine. I'll just go this way. Lord knows because I know. How many times have we been out somewhere and we met somebody from church? Like, especially when we were at the Ark, like countless times. I went to a conference in Portland last September. I was sitting behind somebody, and at a time, we had a breakout, and they turned around and started talking to us. His sister goes to church here. I was like, how? How? How did I know you? And he pastors a church in, like, Kansas. And so he was like, oh, yeah, my sister goes to church there. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I'm like, what have I said that could possibly be construed as offensive? Hopefully nothing. Right? But that's the thing. I'm not telling you, like, hey, you need to start doing this and that, and, like, you need to, like, go, I don't know, walk the streets at night praying for people or whatever. If you want to, that'd be pretty lit. Like, you should do that. That'd be cool. But what I'm saying is we live our lives on mission. The way that we treat people and speak to people is the way that we are on mission for the Lord. People need to hear about Jesus, but they need to see it in you more than anything. Because that's the thing. Have you not ever met anybody who is just, like, magnetic? Like, you meet them, and you're like, there's something about you. Like, what? And what do you start doing? Why are you like this? What's wrong with you? Why are you so happy? Why are you so at peace? What's going on here? I remember, I don't remember who it was, but I remember asking somebody that, and then they start telling me, like, hey, I've got the peace of the Lord with me. I don't need to really worry about it. I'm like, ah, you're a Christian. Okay, I get it. I get it. And I saw more and more people like that in my life. That's what brought me to Christ. It was not somebody who argued their way into convincing me I was wrong. It wasn't just the fifth, 20th person telling me I was living in sin and going to hell. It was I met somebody who walked the walk and talked the talk and loved me enough to talk to me about Jesus. And I saw it in his character. It wasn't just that he told me. Is that what he said he believed was consistent in how he lived his life. That's what brought me to Jesus. That's what the city of Huntsville needs. It doesn't need more people picketing. It doesn't need more people telling everybody how they're going to hell. He needs people to be love. We are on mission to love people in Huntsville, Texas. James 3:17 says, but the wisdom from above is first of all pure. What does that mean? Pure means like it's not, there's not an agenda. Have you ever had somebody... Oh, actually, I'll tell a story. Anecdotes are far more impactful and helpful. So I had kids, and you know, when you're your teacher, there are like some kids who love you and then some kids who hate you, and then it swaps. Like my kids who love me hate their other teacher, right? And then my kids who love their other teacher hate me. Like it's just kind of the way it goes, right? And I had a kid who came up to me, and they were like, Mr. Banks, Mr. Manacki was so mean to me today. And I was like, why? What happened? And he told me. And what Mr. Manacki was saying was true, absolutely true. And I had to tell him, I go, you know, man, like, he's right. Like, he's right. But it didn't matter, because how did Mr. Manacki, like, deliver that information? Cruelly, with anger, to prove that he's right. Because that's the thing, when we have wisdom is, first of all, pure, we have to deliver wisdom from a place of, like, I want what's best for you, not to prove that I know more than you or that you're wrong, right? We have to deliver wisdom in a way that's like, I'm telling you this because I love you and I want you to be better, not because I told you you shouldn't do that. I told you, gosh, I knew I was right. This is not for our justification. James 3:17, it is also peace-loving, gentle at all times. This is a hard one for me, hard one. I'm like, sometimes people just need to be smacked upside the head with the truth. No, that's not true, Mitchell. That's not. That's wisdom of the world, gentle at all times. And willing to yield to others. It's full of mercy, and this is the key part, the fruit of good deeds. I'm far more likely to take wisdom from somebody who I see living it out in their life than I am somebody who's just louder or meaner, right? I've told this story 1,000 times, but like I watched a debate between people who believed in New Earth and Old Earth, and it was like an hour-long debate. And at the end of it, neither one of them had convinced me otherwise, and they both were angry at each other. And I was like, this is just horrible. Like, this is from a position of I'm right and you're wrong, right? That's not how we share love, and that's not how we share wisdom. So if you're approaching somebody on the street in Huntsville or somebody in HEV or in Walgreens or Shenanigans, I don't know where you go. maybe confettis, I don't know. And you approach them and you want to tell them something. It's easy to see somebody. It's easy to see somebody and go, okay, well, I'm going to tell this story too. Okay, today's just story time. A good friend of mine, he was wearing a shirt that said, be a good person, right? And he was wearing it in HEB, and a lady approached him and said, that's impossible. You can't be a good person. If you know the Bible, like Jesus says, you can't. There is nobody good. What's one of the fruits of the Spirit? Goodness. It's not saying like, hey, be a good person in and of yourself. The encouragement is like, be a good person through seeking Christ, right? But what was her approach? You're wrong. It wasn't like a, hey, tell me about that. That's how our hearts need to be, right? We don't look at people and go, uh-oh, yes, target acquired. Let me go tell them real quick. Hey, I see that rainbow pin. Let me tell you how wrong you are real quick. No. Oh, I see you with insert political party you disagree with here shirt on. Let me go tell you how wrong you are. We're not looking to like, what is the point of that? What is the heart behind that? To tear someone down. Ultimately, to tear someone down, to prove you're right, to make you feel better, to stroke that pride and that ego. And then you go away feeling awful. Or you can lie to yourself and tell you it makes you feel better. But it makes you feel awful. We do not fight against flesh and blood. Stop fighting against flesh and blood. Love people. These people who don't know Jesus are in bondage, and they do not know it. You're going to prisoners, and you're telling them they're in prison. Duh. Tell them how they can get free. Stop telling them they're in chains and tell them how they get loose of them. That's what I want, right? That's what God wants. He doesn't want you to tell people, hey, oh man, look how miserable you are. You're enshackled. They know that deep, way deep in their subconscious, way deep in their psyche. They know that because their entire life is spent searching for it, searching for something else. They're craving something more. And they're attempting to find it in everywhere but Jesus. Stop telling them they're in bondage. They know they're in bondage. Tell them how they can get free. Tell them, hey, you know that there's somebody who loves you more than you love yourself? You know there's somebody who loves you when you don't love yourself? You know there's a plan for your life? You know that you have purpose? You know that every single one of you right now in this room, this is no longer me talking to someone, this is you. You know that everything in your life has been uniquely crafted. Every experience, every trauma has been uniquely crafted for you to minister to somebody, right? Like, there are certain pastors who I listen to who I'm enthralled by, who I love. And then there's certain pastors who are like, it just doesn't hit with me. It doesn't mean they're wrong. It's that they have a unique way of ministering to me. There are people in my life who I've met who uniquely can minister to me. The fact that I grew up in Georgia, I used to have a bank job, I shoot guns sometimes, I like going outside. I have a unique makeup that makes me able to minister to certain people. You have the same thing. We are all called to be a generation of priests for the Lord. You're not looking to say, well, like, that's somebody else's job, or like, somebody else is a missionary, but like, I'm not a missionary. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You took that mantle on the second you accepted Christ. How could you not tell people about him? How could you not? And my thing is, if you feel like, you're like, yeah, that's like somebody else's thing, but like, that's not really my thing. I would argue, and this is not condemnation, this is encouragement for today. You go lock yourself in your prayer closet and you connect with the Spirit. You have not truly known Jesus yet. Because if you have truly known Jesus, what he's done for you, what the power he has over your life, what that feels like to throw off that yoke of yourself and put on that yoke of Jesus, you can't help but see other people in bondage and go, hey, stop. I have a different way. Let me tell you. Let me tell you. Because otherwise we're looking at them going like, oh yeah, they're in bondage. But like, I got tickets to a movie in 20 minutes. So like, I'll just go do that. We have to ask ourselves, are we using our personal growth as a launch pad or as a parking space? Right? Because all the stuff we've been talking about leading up to this is about us connecting with Jesus, connecting with our community, making sure that we are growing and being discipled. But that can't be like, you can't stop and go, okay, no, I'm cool with that. Like, I want to get better, but like, I don't really want to do that whole like telling people about him or helping people or serving people thing. Too bad. That's what we're called to do. This isn't just about you. You're supposed to be a vessel. We're supposed to be agents of the Holy Spirit. And I'm telling you, if you've gotten to that point and it makes you uncomfortable and you're like, oh man, I just don't really know how I feel about this whole like being on mission thing and telling people about Jesus, oh, you haven't tasted it. You haven't tasted it yet. The fruit in your life is not meant to sustain you. The fruit in your life is meant for others. Meant for others. Who here has like fruit trees, who grows a garden? Have you ever consumed everything you've grown? Never. I'd say the Osteens just gave me eggs. Because if you have chickens, you know, you can't eat enough eggs for chickens that you have, right? Anybody, I remember my grandparents, they had cucumbers and tomatoes and squash and all sorts of stuff. And what did they do with it? They gave 90% of it away. Cooked some, but they gave it away. You can't possibly eat all of it. The fruit that we experience and we receive from Jesus is meant to sustain others, to give to others. It should be an outpouring in our lives to serve others. Let's land this plane. Goodness. Another story. So I was working in the bank. No. Well, I mean, now you asked for it. So anyway, so talking about purpose, when I worked in the bank, and this is no shame to anybody who works in a bank. God bless you. When I worked in the bank, at one point I worked in the woodlands inside of an office building. And so it's like there were other things inside the building, and there was no drive-through. So it was like, unless you knew the bank was there, you didn't go to that bank. There were four of us there, me, the bank manager, and two other tellers. I can't tell you how many days I sat there and did not see a single customer. Days, weeks on end. The most we had in one day was three. And they all went to Harry because he had worked there longer than me and nobody wanted to talk to me, okay? And so what did I do? This was when I was getting my teaching certificate, so I would do some classes and then I would scroll Wikipedia. I probably have made my way through 75% of the Wikipedia archives. I would, you know, you do that like blue link click. It's like, oh, I'll read about swords and then, oop, medieval knights and then, oop, like chivalry and then, oop, serfdom. And like, I just like start going down that path. And all of a sudden I'm reading about quantum physics and I'm like, I have no idea what this is, but like, I have nothing else to do. I was miserable. I hated that job so much. So grateful for it. But like, as far as like purpose goes, I felt miserable just because I felt like there was nothing, like I did not contribute anything. Like it could have been anybody else in that seat, right? I contributed nothing. I felt purposeless. And then I started teaching and I was miserable, but at least there was purpose to it, you know? Like, I really wasn't miserable. It was like extremely challenging, but nothing, like if nothing else, at the end of the day, I was like, I get to make an impact on people's lives. I get to help kids. I may be like a mediocre English teacher, but like I can help kids and like encourage them and love them and inspire them. And that was far more impactful. At the end of the day, after my end of, when I started getting to the end of teaching, I didn't really care how well I could teach kids to find the author's purpose and for the STAR exam. I was far more encouraged and interested in helping kids become better people and better members of society, truly. You have that same thing. Like, God has made you for a particular purpose. I'm not going to say it again. I'll land this plane, I promise. No more stories. Matthew 11:30. My yoke is easy to bear and my burden I give you is light. We have to realize and we have to have the faith that Jesus is not lying here, that this is true. His burden is light because it doesn't depend on our own power. It is an outpouring of his spirit through our lives.